Minerva Radio. Less mainstream, more music.
Isn't it? So good. Greetings and welcome to this, our latest edition of Brock and Roll, here on MinervaRadio.uk, courtesy of Caldy Media. And for the uninitiated, Brock and Roll considers the various histories of popular music, especially the more specialist genres such as psychedelia, prog, hard rock, together with the seldom played pop classics and folk rock experiments from the 60s and 70s. And what we do is choose obscurities and hard-to-find and highly collectible recordings just to sort of express the fact that, you know, these are real rarities. And the last few weeks, of course, we've been looking at the labels that are attached to that particular era as well, except for last week, which under the Vinyl Junkyard moniker, we just played all sorts of rubbish, didn't we, really, which was great. I really loved it. Anyway, this week we return to the record label theme by considering a few non-folk outputs from the British independent Transatlantic Records. Do you remember Transatlantic? Really associated with Pentangle, Bert Jansch, all of those great folkies, Ralph McTell, for example. So anyway, without further ado, let's kick off with this little beauty from 1970. This is Jody Grind and Bath Sister.
She's sitting in the water, sort of grooving in the ocean room. Cause she's the cleanest chick around, you're surely gonna find out soon. She sits all day and floats away, the water always stays in tune.
that's good stuff. That's excellent, I think. If you were writing a rock song or needed to write a rock song tomorrow, you'd pick every little riff and every little sort of development in that particular song. That's the excellent Jody Grind and Bath Sister from their second and final album with Transatlantic before splitting, entitled Far Canal. Very rare, really, really rare. And it's renowned session man of the day, Tim Hinckley. And he ran the band, really, which he formed as early as the mid-60s, I think, as an R&B band. Probably, I don't know this for a fact, but probably after hearing the Horace Silver album of the same name. I don't know if you know that album. That's when Horace Silver gets a bit funky, actually. And they signed to Transatlantic in the latter part of the 60s, just as the label started to recognise its own absence from the growing rock marketplace, you know. I first came across Tim Hinckley's name actually on Al Stewart's Zero She Flies album from 1970, which I've still got somewhere. We'll have to play a track from that. And speaking of which, old albums, you'll notice that there are lots of clicks and pops on these because every single track has been taken from vintage vinyl. Not reissues, not the new idea of, you know, repressing or anything like that. They're the original things. And by the way, before going on, listener Steph Meskell from the Bury Met has come across some interesting info concerning an artist we played last time, Nick Gary. Do you remember his song Wheel of Fortune with the orchestration on it? Steph mentioned via email, contra to the recognised info in Vernon Joynson's Mammoth Tapestry of Delights guide, which I usually use occasionally, and actually sitting on the desk in front of me now, his name was not Garibaldi. And Steph has found out some interesting info about Nick's career, so we shall pursue that next time out. Meanwhile, another track from the Transatlantic stable. The company didn't do themselves any favours in the singles marketplace by releasing 45s on their Big T imprint. So you didn't really know that it was Transatlantic. You know, really daft, very confusing. But there were some good choices, if not hit singles. Jerry Rafferty is one of them. And he was already signed to Transatlantic via his membership of the Humble Bums, about whom we'll, you know, talk about later. And Jerry's first solo album materialised after his and Billy Connolly's musical directions moved away from each other. A Rafferty album plus a single materialised in 71 called Can I Have My Money Back? It's regarded as something as a classic, really. The single received some airplay, but no cigar. And I purchased that single. I've still got it in the drawers behind me here. Can I Have My Money Back at the time? But I was drawn far more to the B-side. So here it is. With a small jump on the intro, you'll notice this is the B-side to Big T 139, Jerry Rafferty, and So Bad Thinking.
See the light. morning when the sun's coming up. I still remember every word she said, and it's so bad thinking about it. Not a thing can make my nighttime bright. Yes, it's so bad thinking about it. I can't sleep a wink at night.
Great song, I think. That was the B-side of Can I Get Me Money Back. And those harmonies just at the end there, almost McCartney-esque harmonies, aren't they? Fantastic. One of Britain's and Scotland's, of course, finest ever songwriters in the pop field, Gerry Rafferty and So Bad Thinking. A transatlantic B-side from late 1971. It gets a bit obscure, really. And did you cop the jump at the beginning? It was really good, wasn't it? I think I bought it that way, really. Pressings were terrible in those days, weren't they? Anyway, so briefly, what about Transatlantic Records? Well, they were founded in the UK by Nathan Joseph in 61. The company started trading primarily as an importer and rebranding stuff, American folk, blues, jazz records. But they began to add British and Irish artists to their roster at quite an early stage, because Nathan Joseph, I think, was kind of a middle-of-the-road singer to begin with, but he recognised the folk scene as a growing thing. And the Dubliners, the Johnstons, Isla Cameron, the Ian Campbell group, big sellers for him, were all signed. And by the mid-60s, many of those also went on to influence the British folk and blues boom. People like Bertie Ansch and John Renbourn, the aforementioned Ralph McTell, John Pearce, Gordon Giltrap as well, who became well known as a proggy guitarist really later on. They were all signed. And they licensed product from America as well. Labels like jazz labels like Prestige, also Tradition, Audio Fidelity. They've had weird albums out on Audio Fidelity, etc. But he was also instrumental in the importation of MK Records, which was a Soviet classical label as well. So little bits of marketplaces he identified, really. There was also the Conversaphone language discs that he did. So if you wanted to teach yourself French, you could put the album on, you know, and say, oui, monsieur, non. Really amazing, really. They must have only sold in the hundreds, I would think. But the interesting thing is the Transatlantic's first commercial success came from three controversial sex education albums imported from the States, I think. I think they were, anyway. And they were not only sold in record shops, but primarily, actually, retailers, not normally associated with record sales, news agents, TV rental shops, and even, in this case, chemists as well. And they were known as rack fillers in those days. Do you remember that expression? Because, you know, they were filled up every month or so by a travelling representative, you know, to put more in the rack, so to speak. And it has been stated that sales of the sex albums approached 100,000 units, although it's always been really, really difficult to number sales not collected, you know, by shops that weren't on those return shops, you know. Weren't record shops. So the figure might have been even higher than that, perhaps even double. Anyway, it set Nathan Joseph up to really get established in the folk scene. And he'd recognise this growing interest in folk music. And, you know, of course, the first Bertie Ansch album, the first Renbourn album were fantastic. But we're not going to play those today, because we're going to stick in the rock field, really. And I think that, you know, it's such an interesting area that you just can't help but get fascinated by the stuff that slipped by the public's notice, really. So let's have the next track up. This is another failed transatlantic big T release, this time from Swedish artist Ola Håkansson, very, very famous artist over in Sweden. And he was in the 60s, leader and singer of Ola and the Janglers. And they'd had hits with American covers mostly. And as far as I can tell, this next release was their one and only record for Transatlantic, and it was probably licensed in. The single was released in 68. It was produced actually by Gus Dudgeon and is sung in English. So see if you've heard this one. This is Ola and What a Way to Die.
We kiss again, and though I'm hanging on,
Now, that's an odd one. That's a real odd one, isn't it? I don't know if you, I mean, I bet you haven't even heard that. I don't know where I picked it up. It might have been in Mr. Edwards' second-hand record shop in Kensington in the 70s, probably. But I always loved it. I certainly didn't hear it on the radio. And that was the big problem with Transatlantic. They couldn't market singles, you know. And it was daft anyway, having this big T label. Anyway, it sounds a tad familiar, I'm sure, even though you might not know it. Maybe White a Shade of Pale, possibly. And Ola might have been listening to that kind of stuff. And of course, it's a very well-produced single. Great stuff, interesting. I tend to think, though, it's less like White a Shade and more reminiscent of Rupert's People's Amazing Reflections of Charlie Brown. Do you remember that? It wasn't a hit. And I think it actually came out slightly before, or was recorded slightly before A White a Shade of Pale. We must play that for you. We must play Rupert's People for you. Great stuff, that. Ola, What a Way to Die. Brilliant. Next up in our transatlantic rarities, a group that seemed to flit from one trendy label to another over the course of the early mid-70s, Unicorn. Based around four members, basically, I think. Ken Baker, Pat Martin, Trev Mee and Pete Perrier. They recorded one album for Transatlantic in 71, one for Charisma in 74, and one for Harvest in 76. Wow, some good deals probably there, but obviously one-off album deals. Now, from that first effort, a single was released on Big T, number 13A, which is now incredibly rare. It's a cover of Jimmy Webb's P.F. Sloan, which had been recorded unsuccessfully chart-wise, actually, in the US by the Association. I'm a big fan of the Association, but it didn't get into the Hot 100 over there. That came out in 71. Maybe their era was over by that time. So this, one presumes, was a tilt at the singles chart by covering the Association.
No one knows where he has gone. No one ever heard the song that boy set wailing in. Oh yeah. Now you might fret and you might moan and sweat about the skin and bone, but you just smile and read the wrong. Belongs to the slow.
wonderful song. How to build a pop song around a semitone descent. A classic example of that, isn't it? Really nice version of a cracking Jimmy Webb song about songwriter P.F. Sloan. And Sloan had helped Webb in his career very early on. Nice, nice. But you wonder, though, don't you? You know, for the time, you wonder if it was ever played on Radio 1, which show would it be pitched at? You know, would it be when they joined up in the morning with Radio 2, didn't it? Terry Wogan play it? Don't think so. Would David Hamilton play it? Don't think so. It would never be on a John Peel show either, would it? So, you know, it makes you think, well, who would be that aim? Would that be aimed at the time? But it's a great song, great song. P.F. Sloan by Unicorn. Great cover, that. Okay, something heavy now from Stray, who were very prolific during their time Transatlantic, releasing 5 now highly collectible albums in as many years, actually. They then moved to Pi and recorded another 3 in 2 years. Del Brumham of the band is still releasing material, although I say still, as new as his first studio release for 13 years. So, but it's out on Talking Elephant now, I think. This is a cracking proto-metal classic, I think, from their first Transatlantic album, The Eponymous Stray. It's from 1970, and it's called Time Machine. lovely stuff. Great. I love that. I absolutely love it. They sound like a bunch of 16-year-olds practicing at the local youth club, don't they? Really? Brilliant snatcher, Raw Power from Stray with Time Machine. I think I might have seen them at the Cabin. Somebody might be able to confirm that. I saw them at the time, but I can't remember where. But they would have gone down very, very well at the Cabin in those days because it was a heavy rock club by, you know, the early 70s. Okay, a progressive contemporary folk rock group who were linked with both Peter Frampton and Andy Bowne. Both of those guys, of course, were with The Herd in the 60s. And Bowne was later in Quo as well. The band were the short-lived Storyteller. Storyteller recorded two albums for Transatlantic, the eponymous first in 1970 and another one called More Pages in 1971, both like hen's teeth now. You know, you can't find them anywhere. I think maybe the second album has been repressed, but very rare originals. Andy Bowne certainly produced that first album and he also wrote some songs for it. And it has been suggested over the years that Frampton plays on the album. The group are based around Caroline Attard, Roger Moon and Terry Durham, who I believe, now I'm not saying that this is true, you know what, you know, rock stars are like, but I believe that Terry Durham claimed to be Judith Durham's brother, but I don't know if that's true. Also, Henry Spinetti also played drums and helped form the band as well, and he was also an ex-member of The Herd. This is a nice sound. It's a bit crackly, but it's a nice sound from the Transatlantic album Storyteller, but oddly relocated as a single by CBS as well. So it's an odd one, this. It's a single on Big T and on CBS and was an album track. Very weird. Storyteller and remarkable.
Hello, how are you? Come on in. Strange, you were just on my mind. To see your face again, you've not lost that look in your eye. It's so remarkable to see the sun change in me. I'm sure you realize, yes, I know you do. It's so remarkable to find that after all this time, you move me just the same.
I think that's really short, but very sweet, I think. That's Storyteller and Remarkable from their 1970 album, produced by Andy Bowne, with possibly help from Peter Frampton. And it oddly came out as a single on CBS, so maybe there was a licensing deal going on there as well. Okay, something a little bit different now, Duffy Power. Now, Duffy was originally part of Larry Parnes' rock and roll stable in the 50s and released several singles between 59 and 61 without any success. Good looking lad though, you know, Billy Fury, Marty Wilde, Stable, you know, did a lot of touring. But he then got into mostly acoustic blues playing and recorded actually one of the first covers of Beatles material. which was alongside the Graham Bond Quartet. He recorded a cracking version of I Saw Her Standing There. Didn't do anything, but that's incredibly rare. No success, of course, as you might imagine. Other singles were released too during the 60s. He spent some time with Alexis Corner's Blues Incorporated, but as far as I recall, his first album didn't materialise until 1971, when he compiled for Transatlantic the excellent Innovations LP. And what he did there was he gathered together material from the previous few years that either might have been released but flopped or, you know, was just held in the can, so to speak. One of which was his own version of Louisiana Blues, which I think is very authentic. Producer Ian's just suggested that the crackles on the record keep you in time anyway, which is a good point, I think. Duffy Power, and a cut from the Interest in Innovations album, compiled by Duffy from tracks made previously in the mid to late 60s without, you know, getting stuff released properly, really. It ended up being released by Transatlantic in 1971, another rare album. I think it came out again on CD maybe in the 1990s, possibly. Now, I've mentioned this next lot previously, the Humble Bums. By 1970, they were a duo, Billy Connolly and Jerry Rafferty. But I doubt whether Billy Connolly was even in the studio at the time this next selection was recorded. Jerry Rafferty's 1970 tilted the singles chart. I loved it when it came, absolutely loved it. It's the excellent Shoeshine Boy, and it went down very, very well at Radio 1. I recall Kenny Everett playing it repeatedly on those Saturday dinner time shows. Didn't do anything, though. Oh, have a listen to this. This is Big T 130, the Humble Bums, and the Bill Leader produced Shoeshine Boy.
Shoeshine Boy, he's making his money working downtown on Main Street. Shoeshine Boy, I know it ain't funny cleaning everything on 2 feet. Get down, get down upon your knees and brush your blues away. It won't be long till Saturday night and you'll be dancing with your lady till the break of day. Shoeshine Boy don't have no ambition, just wants to be a curbside bootblack. Shoeshine Boy, your daddy's getting older, got to take the weight off his back. Get down upon your knees and brush your blues away. It won't be long till Saturday night and you'll be dancing with your lady till the break of day.
Great ending. Another flop single for Transatlantic there. The Humble Bums, Jerry Rafferty really, plus a session guitarist. And Shoeshine Boy, his own song. I tried to buy it at the time. I remember going down to Rocky Lane in Liverpool to see Diane Kane at the Musical Box and asked for it. And she said, oh, you know, because of radio play, you know, she'd ordered a box of them because, you know, she was getting asked for it, but it never arrived. The box of records never arrived. Possibly typical of Transatlantic's awful distribution as far as singles were concerned, no doubt. Now, take a breath. You'll either really like this next lot or not, as the case may be. They are incredibly collectible, that's for sure. We're talking about Marsupilami. Produced by Pete Bardens. Now, you might recall the Shotgun Express track from last month, I Could Feel the Whole World Turned Round. That was Bardens' band. And Pete had also worked with them at that stage, as well, replacing Jackie McCauley. But he began working with Transatlantic in the very late 1960s, attempting to bring the label into the progressive rock environment, you know, the one that was selling so many LPs at the stage. and recorded two albums of his own, which we'll hear from one of them a little bit later, and also worked as a producer, and in this case for the band Marsupilami. They recorded two albums for Transatlantic between 70 and 71, peak time really for that sort of stuff, and were somewhat based around two brothers, Fred and Leary Hassan. Bardens was heavily involved in both releases. He might have even written a few bits and pieces. See what you make of this. This goes on a bit, I must be honest. It's Marsupilami's Prelude.
Today to rip the veil from your eyes, unhinge your heads and pull out your bloody minds. We'll be right back.
bit comical, really, isn't it? It's really interesting, though. Marsupilami and Prelude. To what? I've no idea, really, but there we are. You pays your money and you takes your choice. Very rare, highly collectible. Whew, right. Anyway, well, let's have another stray track to relieve the tension, shall we? This is time. This one's from their second transatlantic album, Suicide. It's called Nature's Way. Stuff there. Excellent. A very underrated band, Stray. Excellent proto-metal, you might say, from Stray's second transatlantic album, Suicide, predating the new wave of British heavy metal by quite a few years, I would say. No wonder they stuck around. Anyway, have you heard of the Purple Gang? They recorded what became an important song for Transatlantic back in 1967. It wasn't a hit, though. The Big T single 101, Granny Takes a Trip. And it was just a bit of simple latter-day skiffle, really, quite harmless enough. And the lyrics discussed this granny who every year turns up in Hollywood to audition for the movies but always gets knocked back. But it became the UFO Club theme tune in 1967, owing to the Taking a Trip tag, and was duly banned by the BBC. The subtleness of that was, oh, it's amazing, isn't it, really? I mean, it should have been a hit, of course, especially, actually, if we think back from these far-off years now, that it predated that kind of Ray Dorset, Mungo Jerry sound that started to emerge 12 or 18 months later or so. So you'll probably know this one. Granny Takes a Trip from the Purple Gang. Never get tired of hearing that. That's great. The Purple Gang, the band Granny Takes a Trip, which was out on Transatlantic. It actually sold a lot of copies for a sampler that they brought out. Even though the single was banned by the BBC, Nathan Joseph was very into this rack filling idea, and he was one of the first guys to introduce samplers. We know the Rock Machine stuff, don't we, and all the stuff that came out on Ireland for 14 and 6, but actually Transatlantic were at it before everybody else. And the first sampler, called Listen Here on Transatlantic, featured Granny Takes a Trip. And so it sold really, really well. Great stuff. Plus another 12 tracks for the privilege, so to speak. Okay, just to break our non-folk rule a little for this next selection. I mean, we already have done really with the Humble Bums. The Johnstones were one of Transatlantic's best-selling folk groups. Massively, massively popular in Ireland. Really good band. They reached the Irish single charts on a regular basis. But by 1969, they were also recording much more contemporary material than they had previously, which included, actually, early Joni Mitchell songs, such as this one. This was a big hit single in Ireland. The, I would have to admit, somewhat over-orchestrated Urge for Going.
I awoke today and found the frost perched on the town. It hovered in a frozen sky, then gobbled summer down. Sun turns traitor cold and all the trees stand shivering in a naked rose. I get the urge for going, but I never seem to go. I get the urge for going when
I have summer-colored skin. And not another girl in town my darling's heart could win. When the leaves came trembling down and coolly winds did rub their faces in the snow, he got the urge for going, but I had to let him go.
Now the warriors of winter give a cold triumphant shout, and all that stays is dying, all that lives is getting out. See the geese in chevron flight, flying and racing on before them.
They've got the urge for going, and they've got the wings to go. They get the urge for going when the meadow grass is turning brown, and summertime is falling down, and winter's closing. So I'll apply the fire with kindling, pull the blankets to my chin. I'll lock the vagrant winter out and keep my wandering in. I'd like to call back summertime and have it stay for just another month or so. She's got the urge for going, so I guess she'll have to go. She gets the urge for going.
Absolutely. I love the song anyway, Joni Mitchell. Early Joni Mitchell song, Urge for Going. But that version by the Johnstons, I just think is wonderful. I'd have bought it at the time if I'd had any money. But also the Johnstons, we must remember, was you know, Paul Brady moved into the Johnstons by the, I think it was the early 70s. And, you know, he became a real classic songwriter, didn't he? Great stuff there. The Johnstons and Joni Mitchell's Urge for Going. The somewhat over-orchestrated. I don't know about the oboes in there. But anyway. Well, getting towards the end now, and Pete Barden's name has certainly cropped up during the show, hasn't it? As it did with Shotgun Express in the previously one. And I mentioned before that he recorded two albums of his own. So let's end with the excellent title track from his The Answer album. You probably remember, if I brought it to mind for you, that a little later, actually in 72, Barden's decided to form his own band, which he named Camel. Yeah, it rings a bell, and it was the instrumental Snow Goose album. Really good recording that put him and his group into the big time. I think The Answer, which you're going to hear now, does provide a hint of his later success. It's very melodic, and certainly for its era, not at all pretentious, unlike one that we played earlier on by another band. So this is Pete Barden's The Answer, and I'll see you soon.